Shrink Wrap Radio number 47, August 15th, 2006, Psychological Survival in Israel. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist in you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional.
People worry, just worry. Worried to death. It's a funny feeling. On one hand, one feels, oh, I'm lucky that I don't live in Kiryat Shmoneh, and even not in Haifa or Tiberias. On the other hand, there is a feeling of identification and praying that it will stop. I think the most prevalent feeling here is, please God, let it stop.
That was the voice of Varda Ratziel Jaconte. Regular listeners will recall that some time back, I conducted an interview in episode number 24 with Mohammed, an Iraqi listener in Baghdad. The focus of that interview was to explore how Mohammed and his friends cope with the stress of living in what has become a war zone. A similar impulse motivates today's interview. In recent weeks, the northern part of Israel has found itself getting pounded daily by rockets launched from Lebanon by the Hezbollah. Consequently, I've wanted to speak to a mental health professional in Israel about how people there are coping psychologically with this latest round of violence. Israel has been dealing with bus bombs and suicide terror bombs longer than anyone else. Consequently, I'm wondering what sorts of mental health strategies they've worked out to keep life bearable there. Thanks to Israeli listener Cody, I found out about today's guest, Varda Ratziel Jaconte, who is a Tel Aviv psychologist with 15 books to her credit and who hosts a daily call-in radio show. Varda was having some difficulty hearing me on our Skype call, so my voice will sound louder than hers, inasmuch as I had to more or less yell into the mic. Now, on to the interview. So, shalom, Varda. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Hi, hello.
Where in Israel are you located?
I live in Tel Aviv.
Okay. And I understand that you're a psychologist with a daily radio show there. What's your show called?
It's called by my name, Varda Ratziel Jaconte.
Okay. And tell us...
It's daily, 6 days a week.
Okay.
5 days in the afternoon and Friday in the morning.
Okay. And tell us a little bit about your show. Are the listeners able to call in while you're on the air?
Yes. My listeners can call me. They can write to me fax. They can write to me in the internet. And they can send me SMS while I'm speaking to them, which I can see on my monitor.
Okay.
It's very lively.
Yes, sounds like it. And I understand that you're a therapist, is that right?
Yes, right.
And what's your background training?
I've not specialized in any special field. I just learned clinical psychology, social psychology. I worked in the Air Force for 7 years.
Uh-huh.
In a group, how do you call it? Organizational psychology. I wrote materials for schools, for teachers, and I wrote 15 books.
Oh my goodness.
So I'm very, I would say, I'm colorful and superficial.
Okay. And do you have any particular theoretical approach to therapy?
It's very eclectic.
Okay.
In a way eclectic, and I'm open to all kinds of, I would say, quite conventional I object to, how I would say, well, English is not my mother tongue, I would say thinking in long psychoanalytical treatment instead of taking the more modern medicines, psychotherapeutic medicines, drugs.
Do you say you do support the use of drugs?
I mean, how do you call it when you go to a psychiatrist and you get Prozac?
Yes.
I support that.
You do support that. Okay.
Oh, yeah, yes. And I have a big experience because I got many reactions, letters, and from my patients and from my listeners in the radio. In a way, they say that I, and from, of course, by psychiatrists, and because my program is so popular and daily for 7 years, and I hardly take
vacation,
holidays.
Yeah,
I'm there. They say I'm rather influential taking off the stigma of going to a psychiatrist.
Uh-huh, very good. Well, that's...
I think psychiatry and psychiatric help, not as, you know, lunatic people going to psychiatrists, but as really helping people get the right quality of life they need.
Yes, yes.
But I don't think everybody should go. On the other hand, I support cognitive behavioral treatment.
Okay, cognitive behavioral, yes.
Yes, and just counseling, I'm open to all kinds of help.
Yes, but it sounds like you take a practical, short-term approach overall.
Yes,
you,
right.
Okay.
Right.
Now, as you know, I'm particularly interested in how terrorism and war have been affecting people in Israel. Do any of the people who call into your radio program talk about stress or psychological problems that have been brought on by terrorism or the current war?
Look, my program deals mostly with universal, regular, daily problems of relationship, love, raising children, coping with adult children, with mother and father-in-laws, with self-fulfillment, satisfaction, job satisfaction. So most of the time, of course, age, getting old, money, most normal, I would say, everyday life problems.
Right, right. So nobody ever calls to talk about their fears or the stress of war or bombings?
They do, but because, look, when somebody has lost a dear one, or when somebody is really suffers post-trauma,
yes,
I speak about it, but then I say you should get help, psychiatric help.
Okay.
Even now, suppose you are post-traumatic.
Yes.
I would not pretend to be able to help such a person. But I really encourage people to understand that specifically for post-trauma, medical help is the really most important thing.
Uh-huh.
You know that after Yom Kippur War, you know what I mean?
Yes, yes, I recall the Yom Kippur War.
Psychiatry used to... cause soldiers who suffered from post-traumatic reactions to tell again and again their horrible stories.
Yes.
And it turned out that there were people who did not really benefit from this method.
Uh-huh.
there are people who, for whom suppression and forgetfulness is a more, I would say, favorable way of coping.
Interesting.
Yes, and research showed it, and practical experience, and a real, evidence of people.
Yes.
And the really most useful way now for coping with trauma is very, very urgently to give medical help, psychiatric help, that would not fixate the bad experience in the long-term memory.
I see. In other words, you feel that maybe the reliving of the experience would help to fixate it in memory.
Yes.
Are there drugs that seem to help with post-traumatic stress?
Yes, like drugs. I don't know how you call it in the States. And still, remember that I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm just a psychologist.
Right.
But still, I speak a lot and I read a lot. And I know that, for example, Cipralex, do you know, how do you call it in the States?
No, I'm not. I don't know that one. But that's okay.
It's written in Israel, Cipralex.
Okay.
Maybe I'll look what is the chemical name of this drug.
Well, that's okay for now. It's just good for us to know that there are drugs out there that are being used, because people in Israel have been coping with terrorism for a long time now, and those of us in other parts of the world are just beginning to get a taste of what you have had to live with for quite a while, and so you may have some things to teach us.
We people in Israel, I'm sorry to say, we live, since I've been a girl, and you know that I'm 66 years old.
I didn't.
So our childhood started with our families in the Second World War, and then the Liberation War in Israel, and then Sinai War, and then 6 Days War, and then Yom Kippur War.
Oh my goodness!
And then Shlomo Galil War and terrorism. This is our life in Israel.
Yes. So are there any psychological techniques or practices that have been developed there to help people deal with post-traumatic stress syndrome?
Look, I think it depends if one is directly exposed to the danger.
Mm-hmm.
Like here now in Israel, people don't live the same unified way. There are people who live in the north, who are exposed to bombing and shelling, and there are those, like me, who live peacefully in Tel Aviv.
Okay.
Well, peacefully, you know, physically peacefully.
Yes.
There are rich people who can run away from the north and go to a hotel in Eilat,
mm-hmm.
and there are the poor people who have to live in a shelter without food, crowded, poor, thinking. So, you see, life is not equal, like everywhere in the world.
Right, right. Has the government set up any sorts of emergency psychological services?
Yes, there are many psychological services about which I don't know enough, because there are, people can call to all kinds of emergency psychological services.
Mm-hmm.
And my program is different, because people still call not for emergency, but dealing still, because life is going on with all kinds of problems that are coming forth. Like, I'll give you an example. Like, we live here in the center of the country, and my wife's parents live in the north, and because of the bombing and shelling, they came to live with us, and my wife, and we have a little baby,
mm-hmm.
which my wife nurses, and it has been 3 weeks since her parents with her sister came, and we have no privacy, and she's very nervous, and so we began to quarrel, and so she asked her parents to go for some days elsewhere, and they got very much offended, and they are angry at us, and now she was hurt because they said that she drove them away from home, from our home, and now she wouldn't speak to my parents because she's offended, you know, things like these.
Those are the kinds of problems that people are dealing with.
Yes, interpersonal problems, mm-hmm. You see?
Okay, I do see.
And of course, people call and say, I feel lack of energy, I feel emptiness, I don't feel, I feel like doing nothing, I don't understand what I live for,
mm-hmm.
What is this all this life about?
Yes. And what do you say to that?
Look, it depends.
Sure.
The reason my program is, I would say, without modesty, is very successful, is because for 7 years, I'm not. I don't give stereotypic answers.
Okay, good for you.
I question the person who calls me about having friends, about relationships in the family, about having hobbies, about having something that interests him or her. I forgot. Look, I also have, I lead a group, interpersonal group,
uh-huh.
in Tel Aviv with my husband.
Okay.
And in the Air Force, I used to work a lot with groups. And I believe very much in group dynamics.
Yes, group therapy, yeah.
Pardon, and I recommend it a lot for people who feel lonely,
mm-hmm.
or don't have friends, or feel alienated. So, not just drugs, but also joining interpersonal group. Group that deals with interpersonal relationships.
Yes, yes, and groups can give people a lot of support, too.
Yes, but support groups, but not just support groups for widows or people or homosexuals. The group we lead is divergent. We accept people who are 20, 30, 40, 50, 60.
Okay.
It's very mixed up.
Oh, okay.
Married, homosexuals, widowed, divorced, bachelors, singles, whatever.
Yes, yeah. One of the things that I'm interested in are dreams. Have any of your clients or radio listeners brought dreams to you that were rooted in the violence that's been going on?
Dreams. Well, I don't really I don't interpret dreams at all. I don't believe in it. I think dreams are the garbage of our soul.
Okay.
One can dream all kinds of... people ask me about it.
Yeah.
People ask me about dreams. But I don't like doing any personal interpretation of dreams.
Okay.
I just tell people... I'll give you an example. Suppose... a girl calls me or writes to me, and she tells me that she dreams that her parents or that her family gets killed or dies.
Yes.
I'm screaming, sorry. So I tell her that she's anxious and she's worried.
Right.
But I don't believe in dreams telling anything about the future. And of course, I object very firmly to treating dreams as expressing wishful thinking.
Okay.
I mean, look, I don't like the Freudian theories.
Okay.
I think Freudian theories are passé.
Okay.
Most of it.
Yeah. Okay. Now, what about the children there? How are children doing psychologically with everything that's going on there? Is it affecting the children?
I don't work with children at all. I work only with adults, only with grown-ups. And children don't call my program, although, look, most children, but I know at a time, I gave a television show. And children are very much busy with universal problems like my friends at school don't like me. Or I love a boy who doesn't care for me. Now, what is going on specifically now is exception, because now we are in wartime.
Yes.
So I guess children in the North are extremely anxious, and they are afraid of any voice, and they stick to their parents, and they want to sleep with their parents, and they wet at nighttime, bed wetting, etc.
Okay, yes, that's not too surprising to hear.
No.
So the picture that I'm getting, Varda, is that in some ways life goes on pretty much as usual because...
No, as I told you, it depends where you live.
Yes.
In Tel Aviv, where I live in the center of Tel Aviv. Coffee houses are full. You see what I mean?
Yes, yes. Life goes on as normal in Tel Aviv, but
people,
in the north...
In Tel Aviv, life goes on, in a way, it's, one feels even a very funny feelings. Only, I believe people watch, for example, me, in my everyday life, I don't watch television. But now we watch television, we stick to the radio... We want. We read the papers. There are lots of arguments, political arguments.
Yes.
People are very much involved, also in Tel Aviv. But life is going on, except for people who have a husband, a son, a brother in the army.
Yes, and many people do.
Yes, but so then... people worry, just worry. Worried to death.
Yes, yes. And so you started to say that it makes you feel funny. I guess it feels strange to live in relative security and yet to see everything that's going on in the news and it's so close by.
Yes, it's a funny feeling. On one hand, one feels... Oh, I'm lucky that I don't live in Kiryat Shmoneh.
Yes.
And even not in Haifa or Tiberias. On the other hand, there is a feeling of identification.
Right.
And praying that it will stop.
Yes.
I think the most prevalent feeling here is, please God, let it stop.
Yes, exactly. And Varda, I know these are difficult issues to discuss, and I want to thank you for what you've shared with me and my audience, and we're all praying with you and hoping for peace to come to your region.
Okay. I would only like to add that we in Israel, we really feel that somebody, and it's a real feeling, that like in Hitler's time, the Iranian leader and Hezbollah want to erase us. And right. That we have to defend ourselves.
Right, right. I understand that. And what a horrible position to be placed in. So people will hear that message, Varda, and I want to thank you for talking
to
us.
Thank you very much.
Shalom, okay. Varda. Shalom.
Bye. Bye.
I hope you learned something from this interview with Israeli radio psychologist personality Varda Jacont. First, I want to acknowledge the horror of having to live in a state of perpetual danger. My heart goes out to all who are so beset. There were two pieces of information that emerged in the interview that were somewhat surprising to me in relation to the treatment of post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD. The first surprise had to do with her report that Israeli mental health professionals find that having the person relive the trauma in therapy may fixate it in memory. The second surprise for me was the use of drugs in the treatment plan. I must say that I've always been of the school that says, get the person to relive the experience in the safety of the therapist's office. The perspective that such rehearsal might actually strengthen the memory of the trauma instead of weakening it hadn't occurred to me. From a learning point of view, though, I can see that the notion that retelling is actually strengthening the traumatic memory makes sense. As far as I know, the practice of getting the person to relive the experience goes back at least as far as the Second World War and has its roots in Freud's psychoanalytic theory of cathartic abreaction. Sometimes Freudian theory has been parodied somewhat as a plumbing model. It's a model that seems to say, if you keep stuff bottled up, the pipes are going to burst somewhere along the line. So it's good to get the pent-up feelings out. Suppressed or repressed memories, from a Freudian point of view, then, are a bad thing. Better to get them out. And I think this is a notion that the whole culture has pretty much come to accept. In the wake of World War II, psychiatrists and psychologists working from this perspective would sometimes use sodium pentothal, so-called truth serum, or hypnosis to get soldiers to experience the feelings they were burying out of fear and or guilt. When behaviorism came along, this practice continued, but under a different rationale. Systematic desensitization came into vogue. Using that approach, the behaviorally oriented therapist would first teach the patient progressive relaxation and then, in gradual increments, have the person approach the traumatic experiences in memory while remaining in a relaxed state. Generally, it would take many practice sessions for a person to be able to fully recall the trauma while still remaining completely relaxed. Later, there emerged a different behavioral technique, which takes an almost opposite approach to systematic desensitization. It's been called implosive therapy or flooding, and the idea here is that it's impossible to sustain any emotion for a very long time. So the traumatized person is force-fed the memory with the idea that they won't be able to sustain the high levels of autonomic arousal. In implosive therapy, the therapist would amp up the imagined scenario to ridiculous extremes, which also helped to distance the person from the trauma. In a sense, we do something like that when we go see a really scary movie. Many times, these horror flicks are really ridiculous in terms of any possible realistic scenario. But they give us a chance to master our fears. We can go in and get really scared and yet know that we're in a safe environment. And presumably this is comforting at some level. In my own clinical training as a young intern in Veterans Administration hospitals, I experimented with all three of these modes, psychodynamic, systematic desensitization, and implosive therapy. The biggest challenge in the VA hospital at the time, though, was that most of the veterans had experienced their traumas some time ago. Regardless of what approach therapists subscribe to, I think there's a fairly universal agreement that early psychological intervention is the key to success. If you can get the person into some sort of treatment as soon as possible after the traumatic incident, the chances of recovery are much higher than if a lot of time goes by. Speaking of the United States Veteran Administration, they have a very informative website on PTSD. On their site, they state that the most common treatment modalities for PTSD are cognitive behavioral therapy, pharmacotherapy, EMDR, group treatment, and psychodynamic treatment. And I've said a little bit about several of those, and I'll go into a little bit more detail here based on their website. Here's what they say about the cognitive behavioral approach. Cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT, involves working with cognitions to change emotions, thoughts, and behaviors. Exposure therapy is one form of CBT that is unique to traumatic treatment. It uses careful, repeated, detailed imagining of the trauma in a safe, controlled context to help the survivor face and gain control of the fear and distress that was overwhelming during the trauma. In some cases, trauma memories or reminders can be confronted all at once, and here they put in parentheses, flooding. For other individuals or traumas, it's preferable to work up to the most severe trauma gradually by using relaxation techniques and by starting with less upsetting life stresses or by taking the trauma one piece at a time. And here they put in parentheses desensitization, which I described earlier. Now, in relation to the use of drugs, they say medication can reduce the anxiety, depression, and insomnia often experienced with PTSD, and in some cases, it may help relieve the distress and emotional numbness caused by trauma memories. Several kinds of antidepressant drugs have contributed to patient improvement in most but not all clinical trials, and some other classes of drugs have shown promise. At this time, no particular drug has emerged as a definitive treatment for PTSD. However, medication is clearly useful for symptom relief, which makes it possible for survivors to participate in psychotherapy. So maybe that's what Varda was talking about when she referred to the use of drugs in the treatment of PTSD. Now, EMDR stands for Eye Movement Desensitization and Reprocessing. And maybe we'll do a show on that sometime in the future. It's sort of one of the relatively new hot approaches. And according to the Veterans Association, EMDR is a relatively new treatment for traumatic memories that involves elements of exposure therapy and cognitive behavioral therapy combined with techniques such as eye movements, hand taps, sounds that create an alternation of attention back and forth across the person's midline. Now, in terms of group treatment, the VA says groups are often an ideal therapeutic setting because trauma survivors are able to share traumatic material within the safety, cohesion, and empathy provided by other survivors. As group members achieve greater understanding and resolution of their trauma, they often feel more confident and able to trust. As they discuss and share how they cope with trauma-related shame, guilt, rage, fear, doubt, and self-condemnation, they prepare themselves to focus on the present rather than the past. Telling one's story and directly facing the grief, anxiety, and guilt related to trauma enables many survivors to cope with their symptoms, memories, and other aspects of their lives. Finally, the VA site discusses brief psychodynamic psychotherapy, which focuses on the emotional conflicts caused by the traumatic events, particularly as they relate to early life experiences. Through the retelling of the traumatic event to a calm, empathic, compassionate, and non-judgmental therapist, they say, the survivor achieves a greater sense of self-esteem, develops effective ways of thinking and coping, and learns to deal more successfully with intense emotions. The therapist helps the survivor identify current life situations that set off the traumatic memories and worsen the PTSD symptoms. Now, I think part of the reason I was so struck by Varda's comment that rehearsing the trauma tends to fixate it in memory is that viewpoint seems to fly in the face of an approach that I recently read about and that I'm planning to showcase soon here. I came across an article describing a treatment for PTSD being developed for the U.S. military. Now, I don't want to steal the thunder from my upcoming podcast other than saying it involves the use of a virtual reality video game as the treatment modality. And I'll be interviewing the university psychologist who developed the game. That should be a very interesting show. You won't want to miss it.
You want to learn about the inside and what makes us tick? You could find all the answers you need real quick. Get on the couch with Dr. Dave. Leave your worries behind. it'll all be fine. It's shrink wrap radio, it's all in your mind. For insight into personal growth and the inner life, here's Shrink Wrap Radio with Dr. Dave.
Okay, so now that you've heard this episode, you're probably thinking of starting a rock and roll band called the Post-Traumatics. Well, you better have a website, and you need to grab that domain name, theposttraumatics.com, before somebody else jumps on it. You can tie it up for a whole year for only $6.95 by registering it at GoDaddy.com and using the discount code SHRINK3 at checkout. We have just a few new additions to our Frapper map that shows where listeners are located. We've got Debbie in Worcester, England, John in San Francisco, Philip in England, and Brother Anthony Bernard in Richmond, Virginia. Now don't forget, you can win a free autographed copy of the book I co-authored, in which I profile the infamous Zodiac serial killer. All you have to do to enter is put yourself on our Frapper map by going to frapper.com/shrinkwrapradio, or you'll find the link on our website at shrinkwrapradio.com. And don't forget to drop me an email if you're at all interested in attending the workshop I'll be co-leading in Tuscany, Italy from September 18 to 24. It's coming up really soon, so hurry. Time's running out.
Hi, everybody. This is Sylvia from L.A., and you're on the couch, on a rock, on a boat, on a plane, with Dr. Dave.
Sylvia, thanks so much for that very clever transition that you created using the MyChingo link on our website. She tried MyChingo two other times and it didn't work, but the third time was a charm. Sylvia is really cool. She sent an email and I found out that she's originally from Italy, but now lives in L.A. and works as an animator on The Simpsons. How cool is that? And she listens to Shrink Wrap Radio while she's drawing The Simpsons. How cool is that? And I must also thank Silvietta, which I suspect is the Italian version of her name, for the very wonderful review she posted on iTunes. Silvietta really gets what I'm trying to do here. Grazie, Silvietta. Please feel free to follow Sylvia's example by clicking on the MyChingo logo on the shrinkwrapradio.com webpage and recording a nice transition or leaving other feedback. And you can send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. You can leave voicemails on Skype. Our name there is ShrinkPod, and we also have an evolving MySpace page thanks to the help of April Fresh Goddess at myspace.com/shrinkpod. Now, it's hard to believe, but I just noticed that Shrink Wrap Radio is coming up on its first anniversary. I recently noticed that our first show is dated August 22nd, 2005. So I guess the next show, or the one after that, depending upon timing, will be our first anniversary show. Any ideas out there as to how we should celebrate it? Now, on to some of the recent emails from listeners. First, we heard from longtime listener Julianne, who normally lives in London, but I guess she's been traveling in this country. She writes, "Sorry I haven't been in touch. Life has been pretty crazy while I've been in the U.S. I'm here another month, but I think things have settled down. My father is in long-term care now that his surgery and radiation are finished, and I think life just might return to normal." And then she goes on to recommend a show that's on the internet on shamanism. It's called The Shamanic Hotline with Dr. Stephen Farmer. And that can be found at hayhouseradio.com in case anyone else is interested. Julianne, we're always glad to hear from you, and I'm glad to hear that your father's doing better. Another longtime listener is Lloyd in Australia, who writes, "Hi again, Dave. I just heard you talking about a listener to your show who programs computers while listening to your podcasts. You mentioned that you would find it difficult to do so. I think you'd be surprised. I have a similar job to computer programming in that it is highly logic-based. I find I can easily listen to yours and other podcasts while working. I theorize that both activities are using different parts of the brain and that can operate independently without interfering with each other. It's a rather strange sensation, but I'm able to have both processes operating in completely different parts of my mind with seemingly no conflict. I doubt if this is a unique ability of mine, but rather a common ability of all people. Tellingly, if I decide to surf the web and read the news, I suddenly find the podcast very distracting and annoying and have to turn it off to be able to absorb what I'm reading. Also, I cannot listen while writing. For example, I turned off your podcast to write this email. Gee, don't do that. No, actually, I guess I'd rather get the email and then have you turn it back on. It seems that to multitask is only possible when the two tasks are compatible in terms of brain function. Regards, Lloyd. Thanks for that comment, Lloyd. Yeah, I find there's some things I can do while listening to podcasts, but not many. I do pay my bills online, and I found I can listen to Adam Curry's Daily Source Code and pay bills at the same time, and hopefully not send anybody a lot more money than I'm supposed to. And finally, we have an email from Chad, who writes, who's titled his email, Me, All Me. And he writes, "It only be fitting that it was the show on narcissism that spawned this email. A bit of friendly correction. My name, or rather username, was read on the most recent show, and of course it was very unpronounceable. Solus.ipsy. Solus.ipsy. I think I did a better job of it this time. A bit of an explanation. Basically, it is derived from solipsism. When I found it in the dictionary, I saw the Latin origins of the word solus, alone, plus ipsy, self. At the time, seemed a fitting name. Sadly, some websites don't allow the dot, thus making it even more hard to understand. I'm somewhat of a new listener, but I've loved every bit of it so far. Eventually, I will make it through the whole archive and be up to date. Keep up the good work. P.S. My real name is, in fact, Chad." Chad, thanks so much for that explanation. I was very mystified by that name that I read out loud and last time and mispronounced, and I thought maybe you were in Greece. And of course, solipsism is the philosophical position that it's all in your mind. Okay, that's it for the emails. Now remember, you can send your emails to shrinkwrapradio.com. And there's now yet a new way to access Shrink Wrap Radio. You can do so by going to shrinkwrapradio.podshow.com. The Podshow site has a number of features designed to help you subscribe to your favorite podcasts. If you're not subscribing to Shrink Wrap Radio, by the way, but just going to the website, please do go ahead and subscribe. It helps our numbers to have people who are regularly committed. There's even a place on the Podshow site where you can leave your reviews of Shrink Wrap Radio. So I hope you'll leave some of the good comments you've sent me by email and leave them there so that others will be attracted to the show. And please help us to grow our audience by spreading the word about Shrink Wrap Radio to your friends and your colleagues. And if you've got a podcast, a blog, a MySpace, or a LinkedIn page, put a link and a plug there. And to wrap things up, thanks again to Varda Raziel Jacob for the interview on psychological survival in Israel. It seems appropriate to close today's show with a song about peace. And in fact, it's called Spirit of Lenin, that is John Lennon, Peace, by Brad Stanfield. You'll find a link to this tune in our show notes at shrinkwrapradio.com. That's it for now. This is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.
Everyone lives, everyone dies. Everyone loves, everyone cries. Round the world we're all alike. So why is there war? why do we fight? There's one sea, one sky, one earth, so you and I gotta learn to live together. When one hurts, when one needs, we all feel, we all bleed. Gotta learn to live together. Peace, make peace, make peace, peace. All right, isn't it time, brother, stop dying? Isn't it time, mother, stop crying? Stop the fighting and the hate. We gotta make peace before it's too late. There's one sea, one sky, one earth, so you and I gotta learn to live together. All right, when one hurts, when one needs, we all feel, we all bleed. Gotta learn to live together.